Picture the Caspian Sea, 1966. American spy satellites pass over the water and photograph something that makes no sense. A machine the length of a football field, stubby little wings, 10 jet engines bolted to its nose, moving across the surface at 300 knots. It is not a ship. It is not quite an airplane. The analysts do not have a word for it, so they give it one. They call it the Caspian Sea Monster. I'm Vector, and this is Cleared Direct on Radio Hangar. That monster was real. It was a Soviet machine, and the physics that held it up is the same physics behind one of the most interesting bets in the future of flight right now. So let's talk about ground effect. Let's talk about a company called Regent, and a vehicle that is trying to be a boat, a hydrofoil, and an airplane all in the same trip. Let's break this down. Before we go further, this segment is supported by AviationSoul.com. They make aviation challenge coins that mark the real milestones. First solo, private pilot, instrument rated, CFI, the whole journey, beautifully made and built to last. If you have a milestone worth keeping, or you know someone who's about to hit one, take a look. AviationSoul.com. Now, ground effect. Every pilot in the audience has felt this, whether you have a name for it or not. You're on final, you cross the threshold, you start the flare, and the airplane just does not want to quit flying. It floats, it cushions, it settles slower than you expected. That cushion is ground effect. And here's what is actually happening. When your wing gets down close to the surface, roughly within one wingspan of height, the ground interrupts the wingtip vortices, those spiraling swirls of air that trail off your wingtips and represent wasted energy. They get squashed and disrupted by the surface underneath you. Less swirl means less induced drag, and induced drag is the price you pay for making lift. So down low, the wing gets more efficient. It makes the same lift for less drag. The data tells an interesting story here. A wing operating in strong ground effect can cut its induced drag by something like a third, sometimes more, depending on how low it is and how the wing is shaped. That is not a rounding error. That is the difference between a machine that pencils out and one that doesn't. The Soviets looked at that number and got ambitious. They built a whole family of these things and called them Ekranoplans, ground effect vehicles. The Caspian Sea Monster was the prototype. Later, they built one called the Loon, a missile carrier, and it worked. It flew, if you want to call it flying, a few meters above the Caspian at hundreds of knots, invisible to radar that was looking for high-flying aircraft, too fast for any ship to catch. Here's what most people miss about the Ekranoplans. Though, they were a nightmare to fly. You were skimming a handful of meters above open water at high speed. A big wave, a swell, a moment of inattention, and you're in the water at 300 knots, which is not survivable. The pilots flew them essentially by hand, constantly fighting the machine. There was no room for error, and the whole program eventually withered. The physics was sound. The operational reality was brutal, so the idea sat there for decades. A beautiful efficiency gain wrapped around an unflyable machine, and that is exactly the gap that a startup out of Rhode Island decided to attack. The company is Regent. The name is an acronym. It stands for Regional Electric Ground Effect Nautical Transport, and they build what they call a sea glider. Their first production vehicle is called the Viceroy. 12 passengers, 2 crew, all electric. And here's the pitch. It is designed to move people between coastal cities. Boston to New York down the coast, across the Hawaiian Islands along a crowded shoreline where the roads are jammed and the airports are far from downtown, but the water goes right into the heart of the city. Now, the clever part. The clever part is that Regent looked at why the Ekranoplans failed and engineered around it. The Viceroy does not just skim the water and hope for the best, it moves through 3 distinct modes, and the transitions are the whole trick. Mode 1, it floats. It sits in the water at the dock like a boat on its hull, and it maneuvers around the harbor slowly, like any other vessel. No special infrastructure. It uses existing docks. Mode 2, it rises up onto hydrofoils. If you have ever seen a modern racing sailboat or a hydrofoil ferry, you know these, underwater wings on struts that lift the hull clear of the water as speed builds. Now the vehicle is riding on foils, the drag drops way down, and it is stable, because the foils are cutting through the water, and the water is smooth and predictable compared to air. This foiling mode lets it handle bigger waves during takeoff and landing without slamming the hull. Mode 3. It lifts off the foils entirely and flies in ground effect, a few meters above the surface on its wings, fast, quiet, efficient, riding that cushion the Soviets discovered but never tamed. The foil is the answer to the Ekranoplan problem. That's the insight. The old machines had to transition directly from water to flight, punching through the roughest, most dangerous part of the envelope with nothing but brute speed. The Sea Glider uses the hydrofoil as a bridge. It rises gently onto the foils, gets stable, gets fast, and only then does it commit to the air. And when it lands, it does the reverse. Comes down onto the foils first, sheds speed, settles onto the hull. The dangerous moment is managed instead of survived. Why go through all of this? Why not just build an electric airplane? This is where it gets genuinely smart from an engineering standpoint.
Battery electric flight has one enemy, and that enemy is energy density. Jet fuel holds an enormous amount of energy per pound. Batteries, even the best ones we have, hold a small fraction of that. So an electric airplane spends a huge chunk of its energy budget just climbing to altitude and clawing its way through the drag of normal cruise. The range comes out short. That's the whole story of why electric aviation has been stuck at small trainers and short hops. The Sea Glider dodges the two most expensive things an airplane does. It never climbs to altitude, so it never pays that climb energy. And it flies in ground effect, so its cruise drag is dramatically lower than a conventional airplane at the same speed. Regent's numbers put the Viceroy's range on current batteries at around 180 miles, with future battery chemistry pushing that further. 180 miles of electric range with 12 passengers aboard for a battery airplane, that is a number you cannot get any other way. Ground effect is what buys it, and it stays low over the water, which means from a regulatory standpoint, it is not competing for airspace or airport slots. That matters more than it sounds. So let's be honest about the whole picture, because I do not do hype without caveats on this show. Here's the regulatory reality. A Sea Glider is a strange animal legally. It operates on the water like a boat, so in the United States, the lead agency is actually the Coast Guard, regulating it under maritime rules as a high-speed craft, not the Federal Aviation Administration regulating it as an aircraft. That is a genuine advantage, because maritime certification for a novel vessel is a more navigable path than full aircraft type certification, which can take the better part of a decade and sink a startup before it ever sells a ticket. But it is also uncharted water, no pun intended. The rules for a 12-passenger electric flying boat that cruises in ground effect are still being written, and the first one through the door always pays the highest price in delay.
Second caveat. Weather and waves. Ground effect flight lives in the bottom few meters of the atmosphere, right where the sea state matters most. Regent designs the Viceroy to handle significant wave heights of a few feet, and the hydrofoil helps enormously. But the ocean does not always cooperate. A route that is beautiful on a calm morning can be unflyable in an afternoon blow. Any operator running these is going to have weather cancellations that a regional jet at altitude would fly right over. That is a real limit on reliability. And reliability is what sells transportation. Third, obstacles and traffic. You're operating a fast vehicle in the lowest layer over the water, where the boats are, where the swimmers are, where the harbor traffic is. The whole safety case depends on sensing and avoiding other vessels, on disciplined routing, on staying in corridors. This is a solvable problem, but it is not a solved problem, and it is going to take real operational hours to prove out. Now, who is actually building this? And where does the timeline honestly stand? Regent has flown a full-scale prototype of the Viceroy. They ran it through the float, foil, and fly transitions on the water and sea trials off Rhode Island. That is a serious milestone. A lot of future of flight companies show you a rendering and a press release. Regent put a full-scale machine on the water and moved it through all three modes. They have taken orders and deposits from operators, including some serious interest from carriers in coastal markets and reported interest tied to defense and logistics uses, because a fast, low, quiet vehicle that runs from any dock has obvious appeal beyond ferrying tourists. The honest timeline is mid-decade and beyond for paying passengers. They are targeting entry into commercial service in the second half of this decade, pending that maritime certification. And I would tell you to treat any first service date from any startup in this space with a healthy margin. These things always take longer than the founders hope. That is not cynicism, that is just the base rate. So here's where I come down on it. The Sea Glider is not vaporware. The physics is 100 years old and proven. The Soviets flew it. The gap was never the aerodynamics. The gap was controllability and safety. And the hydrofoil transition is a genuinely elegant answer to the exact problem that killed the e-crenoplan. Pairing that with electric propulsion, where staying low and slow climbing actually plays to the technology's strengths instead of fighting them,
That is a real match. It is one of the few places in electric transport where the vehicle concept and the battery limitation are pulling in the same direction instead of against each other. Whether it becomes a business is a different question from whether it works. Coastal ferry markets are real, but they are specific. This is not going to replace the airlines. It is not trying to. It is trying to own a niche the airplane was never good at and the ferry is too slow for. The stretch between a slow boat and an expensive short flight. If it captures that, it does not need to conquer the world. It just needs a few good coastlines. And that is the thing I keep coming back to. The future of flight is not always about going higher and faster. Sometimes the smartest engineering move is to notice that the ground itself, or in this case the water, is doing you a favor if you just stay close enough to use it. My thanks to Regent for the specifications, and to the aviation and maritime press that has been tracking the sea trials closely. You can find more on everything we cover at RadioHangar.com. Stay curious about the strange machines? Sometimes the monster in the spy photo turns out to be 60 years ahead of its time. I'm Vector. Keep the shiny side up and the wet side down.